Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Not angry. I try not to get angry. I get really angry at missed free throws. It's just a pet peeve of mine. It's what I can control, Jim, and that's really what it is all about. And LeAngelo has been, since coming back, he's been tremendous as far as been to all his classes, all the tutors, all the mentors. He's done exactly what's been asked of him. I don't think it's angry. I think it was just more maybe surprised. If you're looking for one word, maybe it was surprised because it's nothing that we saw coming.
Do you plan on reaching out to either Jello or his father about what happened?
No.
Why not?
Why for? I didn't make that decision. I mean, I'm here. I'm at Pauley every day. I'm at the Austin Center every day working. If they need to talk, they know where to find me.
LeVar told me he felt like LeAngelo would average 25 points a game. That was never going to be the case. We're talking different circumstances now. He was frustrated, as he told me yesterday, that no decision was made on the length of the suspension. And I think LeVar's mindset on this is, I want my kid to keep getting better. And by getting better, he's got to play. So he's got to play somewhere. So he's taken him out of UCLA, and now he'll explore other options, which are certainly the overseas route. His goal is to have all three of his boys in the Lakers organization. And he said it. Even if Jello isn't drafted, he wants him on the Lakers D-League team. And eventually, he wants Melo on the Lakers. He's going to do what he can to make that happen.
I didn't think it was warranted. Thought maybe a fine, pretty steep fine, something like that. And the play that happened in the context of a football play. Wasn't away from the ball. It wasn't a hit on a kicker, a defenseless player. It was a guy getting ready to make a tackle, a much bigger football player. Obviously, we don't like the taunting, standing over, and things like that. You look at what Gronk did and what Juju did, and he got the 6-inch suspension. I don't know that that's necessarily fair.
Watching the game with my wife, who's, you know, she's a football life, but just as much of a fan as I am, we talked about, from the league standpoint, where they want to go. And that game was the antithesis of where the league wants the game to go. 10 years ago, some of the things that we saw, great. Now, to have that on display on national TV, that is not the picture that the league wants to present to, you know, to the fans, to the younger generation who are coming up.
But the league right now, if you want to change the game, still keeping the game at its base the same, if you want to start disciplining people, you better come up with a better way of being consistent about this. When you're disciplining off the net result, and it looks like you're being reactionary, like, let's take the temperature. Are they going to be mad? Let's hit them. If they're not going to be mad, there's a fine. You can't do that.
We've had this problem 2 games in a row. I think we go a little too much just one-on-one isolation. Got to be able to sustain our offensive energy better. Overall, still, our rebounding's got to get better, and our offensive execution's got to get better. But overall, our defense was okay.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. The extravaganza is back indeed. It is the sixth afternoon of the month of December. We're getting closer to Christmas. We're getting closer to bowl games. We're getting closer to the college football playoff. We're in the final quarter of the NFL season. Basketball moves into its second quarter of the season. Man, we got a lot to talk about today. Appreciate you joining us. Coming up in about a little bit less than a half an hour, I suppose, Adam Stites, NFL writer, SB Nation, will join us to talk about some of what you just heard in the montage. Coming up at 4:10, top of hour number two, so an hour from now, we will talk to David Fernandez, DetroitBadBoys.com, about the other thing you heard in that montage, Stan Van Gundy lamenting, and obviously with good reason, the plight of the Pistons right now. Notice I didn't say flight. They're not flying. In fact, they're grounded. And I know I'm mixing metaphors here. Pistons aren't birds, but you understand the point. They're not flying high. They are in some dark times right now. 3 losses in a row. Still a very strong overall start to the season. But what is going on with the Pistons, having lost 3 in a row and now heading into a road game at Milwaukee and the Freak and Eric Bledsoe and the boys tonight? So we'll talk to David Fernandez about the NBA coming up. Also, just curious on the NBA front, who is, in your opinion, the MVP of the first quarter of the season? Some crazy numbers being put up by James Harden. Some crazy numbers being put up by LeBron James. Some crazy numbers plus wins, really big-time wins, put up by Kyrie Irving and the Celtics, and also, of course, the Freak. We talked about his numbers about a couple of weeks ago, about what a great start he was off to, and it's still there. Who else might be under consideration for the MVP of the first quarter of the season? We'll kick that around just a little bit when the time is right. But for now, I can't believe what I'm watching happen to the National Football League. I can't believe what I'm hearing. I can't believe the columns that are being written. I can't believe the pundits who are offering commentary on radio and television shows, some of which you just heard there with Damian Woody and Lewis Riddick, and commentators talking about, as ugly as that game was on Monday night, I mean, that's just really bad. That's really bad for football. It's bad for the league. We just can't have that. 10 years ago, yeah, ooh, but now, no. I'm disgusted. I am absolutely, positively disgusted. I'm disgusted with the fact that we're having these conversations about the National Football League after a Monday night football game that, quite honestly, was ugly for only one reason. Well, no, I'll give you two. For two reasons. One reason is because a guy got seriously hurt on a hit that was not one of the ones in question. It was just Ryan Shazier unfortunately lowered his head when he made a hit, and it impacted his neck and spine, and it's got him in a Cincinnati hospital. And we're not exactly sure if there's nerve damage or anything else, if Ryan Shazier is going to be okay, if Ryan Shazier is going to come back and play this year, if Ryan Shazier is ever going to come back. That's ugly, no doubt. He's undergoing tests today, still in that Cincinnati hospital, not returned to Pittsburgh yet. Prayers for Ryan Shazier. So that is ugly, but it has nothing to do with the, you know, viciousness or the violence of the game. And it was also ugly because there were a ton of penalties. The officials over-officiated the game. The Bengals had 150-some-odd yards penalties. The Steelers just under 100. I think combined they were like 250-some-odd yards of penalties. So it was ugly from a holding, pass interference, illegal use of the hands, you know, football stuff standpoint. There was just a lot of them. And probably a little bit of a whistle-happy crew. I think the announcers in the game did point out that this crew had the second, or is averaging in the season, the second most flags thrown of all the crews working in the league today. So it was ugly from that standpoint. But to listen to the pundits tell it, this was some sort of a throwback to civilization, where animals were fighting in a ring. It was blood sport. Where like as I made the comparison yesterday to the gladiator games in ancient Rome, that this was somehow just like a throwback to, you know, pre-civilized times where blood and sweat mixed together to make the crowd roar, and then we're evolved from that now, and we should never let it go back to that again. To listen to all of these pundits and to read all of these columns, and I've read too many of them. I'm going to quote one or two of them as the show goes on. But I don't want to give the rest of them the time or the pub that they wish. I just miss not. And what I am going to tell you is you listened to Damian Woody there primarily. Damian Woody crying about this. Lewis Riddick a little bit more, in my view, a little bit more of the voice of reason. I'm going to point out to you the two individuals who did more damage to the game of football in the eyes of fans, in the eyes of parents whose kids may or may not play based on their parents' decisions, in the eyes of sponsors, spectators, television executives. The two individuals who did the most damage to football on Monday night were not Juju Smith-Schuster. Is it Smith-Schuster or Schuster-Smith? I keep getting them backwards.
I thought it was Smith-Schuster.
Smith-Schuster, you're right. We're not Juju Smith-Schuster and George Ioka. No. Those were not the two individuals who did the most damage to football because of their hits. The two individuals who did the most damage to the National Football League and the game as a whole, the sport as a whole, on Monday night, were Sean McDonough and John Gruden. Let me say that again. Sean McDonough, the play-by-play voice, John Gruden calling, doing the color commentary and the analysis. They did more to hurt football by overreacting with their weeny, whiny selves. And it's so weird. I don't want to call John Gruden weeny and whiny. Remember what John Gruden's nickname was when he was coaching the Raiders? And even even with the Buccaneers after that? They called him Chucky because he had always that. He looked just like the Chucky doll from the movie, from the movies. Child's Play
movies, yeah.
Yeah, his nickname was Chucky. He's a loud, he's an aggressive, he is a bombastic lover of hitting. He's not weenie and whiny. Sean McDonough, in my view, dragged John Gruden into weenie and whiny during that broadcast on Monday, to the point where both of them, because Gruden didn't want to just disagree with him and say, no, I don't think there's anything wrong with it, so he just kind of went along. But those two guys, combined with their commentary, had everybody who covers football writing on the internet on Tuesday, yesterday, and again even today, about the bloodbath in Cincinnati. Steelers and Ravens, or Ravens, Bengals set the NFL back 20 years in terms of its evolution, all because of chippiness and pettiness. And I would submit to you there was one play that deserved that kind of discussion. And that one play was the one committed by Ioka, who is the one guy who just had his suspension overturned. Wait, what? That's correct. The worst hit in the game was the helmet-to-helmet, crown-of-the-helmet Ioka to the crown-of-the-helmet worn by Brown, hit in the end zone as he tried to break up the pass and separate Brown from the ball before he could land and complete the, quote, process of the catch. It was the only terrible hit of the game. The only one. Because the one by Juju Smith-Schuster was an absolutely legal football play. Now, you might say it might had to be flagged because there was some helmet contact. It absolutely did not warrant a fine, and it absolutely did not warrant a suspension. With the exception of him taunting by standing over the fallen Vontaze Burfict, punk that he is, Juju Smith-Schuster did nothing wrong. He delivered a shoulder to the chest, turned his head so that he wouldn't make head contact, exactly how he's supposed to. It wasn't a defenseless player. It wasn't away from the play. And it wasn't because he was targeting Burfict either, by the way. A lot of people say, well, he went after a guy who needed to get got. No, he didn't. He went after the nearest guy who was 4 yards away from Le'Veon Bell. The nearest guy who was going to try to make a tackle. There he is. There's Bell. I'm going to block him. And he blocked him hard. He blocked him high, but not illegally high. And he didn't block him with his helmet. He blocked him with his shoulder. How was this a crowbar bowl? How was this a street fight? How was this some sort of bloodbath? There was one really bad hit. There was one serious accident. The one in which Ryan Shazier, through his own tackling mishap, lowered his head and hit himself, you know, kind of jarred his neck and spine, which is something that we'll pray for his recovery, obviously, over. That's not, like, you know, illegal or cheap shot or anything like that. That was just misfortune. That was just very unfortunate. Then you had Smith-Schuster, who just made a football block. And then you had Ioka and the NFL's rules committee, or whatever you want to call them. The decision makers decide to suspend both Smith-Schuster and Ioka. By the way, the same exact number of games that Rob Gronkowski got the day before for his WWE off the top rope forearm to the back of the head of a prostrate player. They decide that the only one that's going to be overturned is Ioka's, the worst one of the bunch. I'm trying to find the language that the league used in agreeing to overturn the suspension on appeal. The agent for Ioka, and of course I keep saying Ioka, I've heard some people say Iloka as if the L is not silent. I don't know which it is, if it's Iloka or Ioka. But George, the safety for the Bengals, everybody knows who he is now. His agent said the suspension was unnecessary because he was just trying to separate the receiver from the ball. He wasn't trying to injure. But in not trying to injure, he went helmet to helmet directly. It was easily the biggest mistake or biggest foul or worst foul, if you will, of the game and maybe of the weekend other than Gronkowski's. Slavin, the agent for Ioka, said, quote, "We are grateful to the appeals officer, Derek Brooks, for reducing Georgia's penalty from one-game suspension to a fine equivalent to what players who were recently involved in similar plays received. While we still believe Georgia did nothing wrong on the play, and the helmet-to-helmet contact was a result of Antonio Brown's lowering his head as he braced for contact," which is, by the way, something that I always talk about. Always. But in this case, Antonio Brown didn't lower his head. Antonio Brown was in the air. He didn't have an opportunity to lower. Oh, here comes the hit. I'm gonna crouch. Players on their feet can do that. Players in the air are where they are. He was in the air when Ioka came at him, helmet down and helmet first. Period. There is no other way to view that if you watch that again and again. It was easily the most dangerous and most blatantly obvious helmet-to-helmet hit in the entire game, and it gets no suspension now. Meanwhile, Juju Schuster-Smith, who hit Vontaze Burfict in the chest with his shoulder, he still has to sit out a game. It is simply inexcusable, and I once again will point out, the biggest villains here aren't even Ioka or Schuster-Smith or Gronkowski, although Gronkowski was not involved in this game. The biggest villains in this weekend's games were Sean McDonough and John Gruden. They set this game back. They hurt the game of football. They hurt the National Football League. Sean McDonough should never call another National Football League game. I'm going to tell you that right now. Sean McDonough is absolutely not a football broadcaster. I heard Jason Whitlock, former ESPN analyst and now a Fox Sports analyst, talking about this yesterday too. He agrees. Sean McDonough does not like football. For him to whine and cry like the baby snowflake that he is, and by the way, how about your boy Brent Musburger dropping the snowflake line on these guys? I got to give attribution to that. It's not mine. It's Musburger's. Brent Musburger, the 78-year-old retired broadcast legend, actually calling out people like McDonough, who just don't like football. The whining in the, oh, my God, this is so bad for the game. And first of all, that hit is illegal. After you just watched Ryan Shazier get carted off, you would deliver a hit like that? Yes, Sean, it's a football game. And you don't block bigger, stronger players half-assed. Wide receivers don't block middle linebackers with a little boop, love tap. That's how wide receivers get hurt. You block them hard. And that is exactly what he did. And you don't wait for him to swivel his head around to see you coming. Because when he does that, if you wait and slow up, now he's got the momentum and the aggression, and he's going to squash you. Juju Smith, Schuster-Smith, or Smith-Schuster, or whatever the hell he is, and I still don't know if I have it right because I keep calling him one after the other. but Juju, it's Smith-Schuster. Yeah, Kush Lindsey, you said Schuster-Smith. Now, I don't know why I ever trust you. It's Smith-Schuster. Now I have it in front of me. Smith-Schuster. Juju, how about if we just call him Juju?
That'll be fine by me.
Yeah. Well, you need two last names for anyway. Quit screwing with us, Juju. Juju Smith-Schuster did exactly what he was supposed to do. If he waits for him to turn his head around and look at him, and then he runs over Smith-Schuster, Smith-Schuster gets hurt, or if he doesn't block him at all, then perhaps Le'Veon Bell gets hurt. And at the very least, Le'Veon Bell gets tackled. After all, the blocking from the wide receiver on the middle linebacker isn't an intent to injure. It's an intent to stop him from making the tackle. That's what football is, blocking and tackling. Here comes the guy wanting to tackle my guy 4 yards away from him. I'm 4 yards away from that guy. I'm going to block him. He didn't set out hunting for Vontaze Burfict. He set out, well, I'm going to block the nearest guy, to my ball carrier. There he is. And whether he's wearing number 55 or number 51 or number 12, doesn't matter. He's going to block that guy. And that's what Juju Smith-Schuster did. Meanwhile, he's got to serve now a full game suspension and lose that pay. And George Ioka, who tried to separate Antonio Brown's head from his body, in addition separating his body from the ball, he actually gets off scot-free here. Sean McDonough crying about that hit from Schuster Smith, or Smith-Schuster, or Smith-Schuster it is now. Here we go, Juju. Sean McDonough made it very clear. He doesn't like football. He does not agree with violence in football. He does not agree with blocking and tackling, at least at the level that they play it, you know, at top speed. How is he calling games? And the fact that he dragged, in my opinion, the fact that he dragged John Gruden into it as well by saying such outlandish things, Gruden had to go along or start arguing with him on live television, saying, no, I think it was a fine hit, a good block, which would have probably gotten Gruden in trouble considering that the NFL is still trying to convince everybody that they don't owe billions of dollars for being careless with people's health. McDonough should never do football games. Jason Whitlock said yesterday that McDonough should do baseball. Much less contact, he'd be great at broadcasting play-by-play baseball. But keep him the hell away from an NFL game because he doesn't like it. Why? Because he's a snowflake. A crybaby, whiny, soft, oh my goodness, that looks like it hurts snowflake. Brent Musburger, how about him? How about the 78-year-old broadcast legend yesterday tweeting the following at 11:11 p.m., last night, after watching all of this and listening to all of the crying about how violent the Bengals and Steelers, I got headlines all over the place. Let me see. Let me pull out the paper right here and see if it was in. Because I look at it online. I looked at it in physical papers too. Here it is. Here's the headline: Rivalry or Reckless. Subheadline: Steelers and Bengals have been going at it for years, but may have hit bottom on Monday. There is nothing. And yes, I just tore my paper. Again, and again, and again. There was nothing in that game that warranted that type of conversation. The only thing that made that kind of conversation make it into print or into broadcast television or radio is Sean McDonough and John Gruden. They're the villains in this situation. Musburger, quote, on Twitter last night at 11:11 p.m., Yo, snowflakes, quit preaching. The violent world of Sam Huff sold NFL to the masses. The Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders gave us a little sex with our violence. Deal with it. How do you like it? How do you like Brent Musburger at 78? A little violence, a little sex. Deal with it, snowflakes. If you don't like it, turn the gosh blasted channel. That's what I'm talking about. I never was a huge Brent Musburger fan as far as game calling. I'll be honest with you. But you know what? Bro, you have a license to call any game you want if you want to come out of retirement to me. You certainly have a license to do every interview you want. In fact, I'd love to have you on our program. Stay on Twitter. Stay on Twitter, too. Want to hear you. I want to read you, too. I absolutely love it because that's exactly what Sean McDonough is. He's a snowflake, and all of these other whiners and criers about a football game that featured one controversial hit, one, and it was the one that the NFL saw fit to drop the suspension for. The other one was a football block, period. If you think that he made head contact, it was totally incidental and accidental, and it was ancillary, not primary. So if you want to throw the 15-yard flag for the hell, okay. No fine, no suspension. Get out of here with that mess. There were two bad hits. One was self-induced, the Ryan Chase ear hit. The other one was Ioka, and that's it. And that is not enough to say let's destroy the game of football over this game, which hit rock bottom. Give me a freaking break. Adam Stites, NFL writer for SBNation.com, is going to be joining us to talk about this and a little bit more after the bottom of the hour SportsCenter, which comes after We Get Wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Last night in the Washington Wizards win at Portland, Bradley Beal put up a career-high 51 points, making it the third game this season when someone scored 50. It's actually become much more common to score 50, as the current record for 50-plus point games in a season is 8. And that's happened a total of 3 times, including the last 2 seasons. The third year was 1989-90. So could we be challenging that before this season is out? That is your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. Adam Stites, SB Nation, talks NFL with us coming up. I want you to be a part of it, too. Don't just sit there on your hands. Don't be sit there looking, laughing or yelling at your speaker in your car. Dial us up at 866-240-1065. We're back at
now back to the Bob France extravaganza. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I didn't think it was warranted. Thought maybe a fine, pretty steep fine, something like that. And the play that happened in the context of a football play. It wasn't away from the ball. It wasn't hit on a kicker, a defenseless player. It was a guy getting ready to make a tackle, a much bigger football player. Obviously, we don't like the taunting, standing over him, things like that. You look at what Gronk did and what Juju did, and he got the same suspension. I don't know that that's necessarily fair.
Yeah, I don't either. And yet his appeal was denied, and George Ioka's was accepted, and his one-game suspension rescinded. He will just be fined $36,000 by the National Football League. Really, really strange state of affairs in the National Football League right now with respect to the way they're handling hits and suspensions. And joining us to talk about it is Adam Stites, once again from SB Nation, NFL writer, joining us here on 106.5 The Ticket in Toledo. Hey, Adam, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm good, man. I just don't know football anymore. You know, I just don't. I'm at my wit's end here. I fear and I feel both that the game on Monday night, which is being called some sort of a game changer, some sort of a, you know, this is a bridge too far. This is rock bottom for the NFL. It's so violent. I did not see anything of the sort in that game. But what I heard was a couple of guys with microphones in the name of Sean McDonough and John Gruden crying and whining as if this was some sort of a bloodbath that the NFL has to stand up and stop because this is bad for the game and bad for everybody. I just don't know, because I think those comments that everybody watched on national TV prompted a legion of columnists to write similar columns in their papers and blogs and websites yesterday, and even more of them to go on talk radio and talk television to tell that story. And I just did not see it, Adam. What did you see?
I would actually side with John Gruden and on this one, and the ESPN. Yeah, McDonough, that's it. I do. I think a giant reason why there was so much spotlight put on the hits in the game was because it's Bengals and Steelers, because they have a history of, you know, perfect running through Antonio Brown's head a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. So I think there is kind of an extra little intent, and I think one of the biggest differences between the George Iloka hit and the Juju Smith-Schuster one is Juju Smith-Schuster standing over Vontaze Burfict, which pretty much indicates an intent to injure there, or at least an intent to you know, really lay a huge hit on him. So,
well, of course there was an intent to lay a huge hit on him. He was blocking.
Yeah.
A smaller guy was blocking a much larger guy. You don't go in and hit him softly or you get run over.
Right, but the head dropped down and the crown of the helmet hit his face mask.
No, it didn't. No, it didn't. What are you watching? Adam, what are you watching? No, it didn't. No, it didn't. Not for 1 second.
It looked like it.
Jesus Christ. Look at the slow motion and look at the actual point of impact still photos. I mean, for goodness sakes,
his shoulder
pad is in the 55 of the chest below the neck, not at the neck, below the neck, and his head is turned to the left to avoid helmet contact. In no way, shape, or form did the crown of his helmet impact Vontaze Burfict.
You don't think that the top of his helmet hits his face mask? You don't think that top of his helmet hits his face mask?
Of course
I definitely do believe
he did. He turned his head to the left. He turned his head to the left to avoid that, which is exactly the opposite of what Iloka did when Iloka went crown to crown in the end zone on Brown.
And I think both of them should have been penalized because, but I do think that that Schuster puts the shoulder into the numbers, but I think the top of his helmet hits the face mask as well.
You better pull it up again and watch it while we talk, because I did this the entire 2 hours of yesterday's show, watching it in slow motion on loop, and watching and looking at the still photos as well. Literally, I mean, he intentionally turns his head to avoid any helmet contact. The only thing that makes contact is Burfict's face mask with the side of Smith-Schuster's head, because when you hit him in the chest,
right,
his head lurches forward and it hits the side of his head. But in no way, shape, or form was it a helmet-to-helmet hit. And you're right, by the way, I think the taunting is what looked so awful, which is what got the attention of the league, far more than the block, because it was just that. It was how you teach blocking to be done, shoulder into the torso, which is what the chest is part of, and you turn your head to avoid helmet contact. I mean, we teach kids to block like that.
What I was saying was that those helmets did collide. The face mask of, like you said, lurches forward and hits the side of Juju Smith-Schuster's helmet, and that's a play that they're trying to get rid of. Whether you think that that's where it should be blocked or not, that is a play that they're trying to get rid of, and one where I don't think he really needs to lay out a block like that. I really don't think he does. I think if he just slows him down, I think that's something that Danny Amendola does really well with the Patriots, is he just kind of gets in front of people. He doesn't try to do those kind of gigantic hits. And if those helmets collide, whether it's incidental after the shoulder hits the middle of the chest pad, it's going to be something that the NFL doesn't want in the game. So
okay, well, let's address both those. Adam Stites, NFL writer for SB Nation, joining us to break down all of these suspensions and hits that are going on. First of all, Sean McDonough should never call football again, because the man has no earthly idea what the game is all about. It is not a game, Adam. I would submit this to you in response to what you just said of slowing people down. This game is at its core, always has been, about blocking and tackling. Here's a receiver who sees a giant player. And by the way, the idea that this is somehow targeting Burfict is just laughable, because he would have hit whoever was 4 yards away from his running back and coming with a head of steam to go and hit Le'Veon Bell. It's his job. Block that guy who's about to make the hit, who's about to make the tackle. So if that would have been a lineman, if it had been a DB, it didn't matter that it was Burfict. It was just the guy closest to the play where Smith-Schuster was. And so he delivered a hit on a guy that was going to try to make the play. The idea that we're supposed to slow up now, especially when you are an undersized guy going up against a much larger guy and just kind of get in his way a little bit, that to me is just, it's antithetical to everything that this game is about. And while we may be trying to take headshots out of the game, and I understand that point, and which is why I said I wanted to address both of the things you just said, if there was incidental and accidental, which it was, a head contact here, not from the blocker to the defender, Smith-Schuster to Burfict, but Burfict's head essentially kind of recoiling up into Smith-Schuster's because of the shoulder to the chest. If there is accidental contact made, then okay, throw the flag and make it the 15. You can't do that. But in any way, shape, or form, how do we call that suspendable, Adam? That's what I don't understand.
Yeah, and I think it's especially bad when Rob Gronkowski only gets a one-game suspension as well for the, for a hit that's obviously ill-intentioned and aims to injure.
Yeah,
that wasn't even a football play. So yeah, I agree with
wrestling.
That.
Wrestling is what that was. I mean, seriously, and we know Gronk dabbles in that a little bit. I swear to God, it's like he went, you know, top rope, and just, you know, there's my enemy, I'm going to go down on him and smack him from behind. It's just, it was just that cheap. And you're right. How does the league justify? That's one game. And Juju Smith-Schuster throwing a block, essentially, on a bigger, stronger guy in the chest, had some incidental secondary contact with the helmet. How can the league look at those and say, yeah, those are equal?
Yeah, I agree. That's probably the biggest problem out of all of this, is how inconsistently applied the rules are, the punishments are. And so, and then for Iloka's suspension to be overturned and Smith-Schuster's to be, you know, kept in place, it's just a weird standard that they're setting that they definitely have to do a better job of figuring out what exactly are we punishing? Intent or what exactly happens on the field? You know, it's weird.
You know, that last part, if I could jump in here, guys, that last part, because I'm rewatching this whole thing yet again based on you two guys going at it. And, yes, it should have been viewed as a clean type of block, getting low enough. Sometimes you are going to have that contact helmet to a part of the face mask. If the NFL, guys, and please agree or disagree with me, if the NFL had any sense on how to handle these things, which, again, we're being demonstrated, they clearly don't.
No, they don't.
Then they would be going after Juju for the taunting part after it. That's the part. It's like, no, that's the part.
Which
that's
is also
unacceptable.
Not suspendable, though, Jimmy.
True.
That's the thing. It's not suspendable. It's, you may fine him for taunting, just like you may fine Antonio Brown for taunting and twerking, you know, in the end zone. But you can't you can't suspend somebody for just looking mean at the other guy and standing over top him.
Sure.
Did it look Bush League? Yeah. Is it necessary, especially in a game in which you know, two rivals are known to go at each other? No, it's not necessary. Do you want to flag him for the taunt? Go ahead. But you can't suspend a guy just because he did a taunt. And that's ultimately what I think this was. Go ahead. Respond to that as you wish, Adam.
Yeah, I think one of the things that made that block be so a quick penalty is that Burfict is considered a defenseless player in that position, where he didn't see the play coming. He's running and a player peels back and hits him. He's considered defenseless in that position.
And that's
think it should have been.
That is the biggest bunch of crap the NFL has tried to put on us, Adam. That's the thing that just drives me nuts. Is a player catching a pass where his focus, and he's in the air, and his focus is on the ball, defenseless? Yes. Is a punter with one leg in the air defenseless? Yes. Is Antonio Brown, while he's in the air in the end zone there, completely unable to defend himself, defenseless? Yes. Is a defender who's 255 pounds running on both feet, closing in on a ball carrier, who just doesn't have enough sense to keep peripheral vision working for him, and having his head on a swivel like every defender is taught, is he defenseless? No, he's not defenseless. I mean, that's just part of the softening of the game, the complete and utter wussification of the game that is leading to the lack of ratings, the lack of attendance, the lack of merchandise sales, as much as the NFL protests and the national anthem stuff that has ticked off most of middle America. People are sick and tired. He's not defenseless. Why should Juju Schuster-Smith wait for him to turn and look at him before he delivers that hit? If he slows up and waits for Burfict to turn and look at him, then his momentum is now slowed. Schuster-Smith's is, or Smith-Schuster, or whatever the hell Juju is. Juju's momentum is now slowed, and Burfict is one with the head of steam, and he's going to crush the guy, you know, when they go head up. How is that guy considered defenseless? I'm not yelling at you, Adam. I'm yelling at the way the NFL has defined that word. It's just so God-blasted stupid. I'm just going to turn the NFL off.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough definition. Like you said, he's trying to make the tackle. If Juju doesn't make that block, he very well may get in there and make the hit. So,
it might have been a very damaging one to Le'Veon Bell. I mean, Juju Smith-Schuster has an absolute obligation there to block Burfict and to make sure he doesn't go in there and destroy Le'Veon Bell, which is again, that's blocking and tackling, the fundamental core of this game from the day it was invented.
Right, but I mean, as soon as those helmets touched each other, whether it was whether he led with the helmet led with the shoulder into the chest, when those helmets touch each other, a player didn't see it coming. That's where the league is at, where they're going to penalize that every time.
Well, and again, I would have been okay with penalizing that, the penalty side of it. Okay, I suppose. Although, again, you're asking players to defy physics and to defy the laws of human anatomy. Because if you teach them to hit with the shoulder, and what is the biggest pad on any player? It is the shoulder pad. It's big, broad, hard piece of plastic on top of the shoulder with soft, cushy stuff underneath it. That's what you're supposed to hit with. You can't throw a shoulder and not bring the head with it. It's just not humanly possible. Unless you're Plastic Man or Elastigirl, where you can just stretch your head way the hell out of the way while you hit with the shoulder, the head is coming with it. And for them to say that, well, your helmets touched each other when you hit with your shoulder, therefore it's a penalty, is to ask the impossible. I mean, he did everything he could to turn his head to the left, not lead with the crown of his helmet, not lead with his helmet of any way, to deliver a shoulder blow. But as I said, when you drop your shoulder, the head is coming with it, and there might be incidental, accidental contact. And that is what the NFL should be looking at. What was intentional? What was incidental? Was it primary head contact, or was it incidental head contact? And obviously, Iolcus was primary head contact. It was the crown of one to the crown of the other. And here's the league. Yeah, we're going to overturn that one. Up is down, day is night, black is white, 2 + 2 = 5. That's the NFL seems to be their mantra.
Yeah, I think that's probably my biggest takeaway out of all of this is how clearly and obviously inconsistently these penalties and punishments are applied.
Why do you think Gronkowski only got a game?
I'm not really sure. I think they try to steer away from 2-3 game suspensions in general. I was kind of stunned that AJ Green didn't get suspended at all for his fight with Jalen Ramsey. You know, I think
the
they just really tried. I really think they just try not to suspend players for that kind of heat of the moment kind of things where they happen in a game. So. I just don't think they try to do any kind of 2-3 game suspensions unless it's a Michael Crabtree kind of situation where they're throwing off helmets and throwing punches, and then it continues after it gets broken up. So
even then, that
was just too.
If Gronkowski's name had been Perfect or Pac-Man or Indomitian Sue or somebody else with a record in a history of cheap shots. They're going 2, 3, 4. They may go 4, 5, or 6 games or something like that. Agreed that Gronkowski's lack of a history of that sort of thing probably played into it too.
No doubt. Perfect did something like that. He'd probably be done for the year. So yeah, absolutely no doubt that the fact that Gronkowski's never really had any kind of any reason to be punished at all definitely plays into that.
Kushlin, you said right before you came on the air, or we came on the air, that the NFL is starting to look at targeting or something next year. Can you tell us about that, and then Adam give us your response?
Basically, it looks like the owners and those competition committees and things are apparently and it's seemingly this game was the final straw, I guess. But the reports are, as of this afternoon, that they're going to look into a targeting rule for the 2018 season. That's what we got at this point.
See, now let me ask you this, Adam. Since you and I disagreed on the Schuster-Smith or Smith-Schuster, the juju play, if the targeting rule had been in place here, if a targeting, I don't know how they're going to work it, if they're going to do it like college football or what, but and you had the Iolcus hit and you had the juju hit, which one of them looks like to an official they were targeting the head?
I think both of them would probably, if it was applied in the same way that the college football rule is, I think both of them would have resulted in a targeting call. But the Iolcus one looked worse to me, for sure.
Yeah, it did. I think it certainly did. Look at this. Breaking news. Roger Goodell has signed a deal to remain commissioner. It looks like Jerry Jones lost that fight, which was probably expected. Hmm. So Roger Goodell, I wonder if he got his $50 million a year contract, his private jet for life, his pension for life, and everything else. Wow. I'm sorry. I don't mean to change the subject on you. It literally just came across while I was looking for targeting information. Anyway, I would disagree with you because, I think that the primary hit delivered by Smith or by Juju was with the shoulder, and thus it can't be targeting. If his primary target was the chest, which it was, and the helmet was a secondary thing, then it would not be a targeting call. I think the other one certainly would be. And then the last thing on this, Adam, and I know Jim's got one more question for you, too, on something totally different, but when I said at the beginning McDonough should not be calling games anymore, and McDonough and Gruden, to me, did more damage to the game by talking about how this game was so brutal, you and I disagreed on that. Tell me, considering the fact that we had one hit on each side that turned out to be suspended, and then one of them, which, again, the wrong one was reversed, in my opinion. But so at the end of the day, we have one hit that resulted in a suspension. In what way was that game so barbaric, so street fight, so, set the league back 50 years of evolution to the days of gladiator bloodlust? In what way We had one play where Ioka did that in the end zone, which was helmet-to-helmet and scary. And, of course, we had the Shazier thing, which was not a cheap shot. It wasn't a Bengal cheap-shotting Shazier. And it wasn't Shazier trying to cheap-shot anybody else. He made a hit, and he ducked his head too low and ended up hitting, injuring his own neck, his own back. Where was this, like, myriad of street fight tactics that would have led to such an over-the-top description of, this is the NFL at its worst. This is the NFL at rock bottom here. Where's this overabundance of plays that would lead to that type of analysis by the guys?
Well, I think like you said that in a bubble, this game wasn't any particularly worse than any other. But I think it's the fact that it is Bengals Steelers. They're the only matchup in the last 3 years that's racked up over 1,000 penalty yards. Those two teams playing each other is just the most penalties come when those two teams face each other. So that factors in. And I think the fact that there were such serious injuries early set kind of a tone for, wow, this sport is dangerous. And then there were some headshots late. So I think it was just kind of the timing.
The one injury early was the Shazier. That was it. The other two, the Burfict and the Brown hits, were both on the same drive in the fourth quarter.
Joe Mixon also looks like he got knocked unconscious on a tackle, and they rolled him over, and he ended up being rolled out for the game with concussion.
Okay, yeah.
And that was a legal hit as well. But I think it was just kind of the violence had already kind of put a damper on the mood early, and then the hits ended up. I think it was just a bad circumstances. Like you said, I don't think the hits were that egregious, or this was any worse than any other game. But I think it was just the stage was set for a national, spotlight being put on some dangerous
players.
I'm glad
we can come to that common ground there, because what you just said is very important to me. What you just said when you said, I don't think the hits were in this game were any egregious than any other game, and I agree. And the way they announced it, the way they called it about how bad this is for the NFL, made it sound like it was worse than any other game, and I fundamentally disagree with that. I think Gruden and McDonough set this sport's attempt to regain favor with mainstream media and with football moms, et cetera. I think they did this game, or this sport, tremendous damage on national television on Monday night with some very irresponsible commentary. Because this game, you're right, it was not more egregious than other games. They had a couple of injuries on legal hits that were just unfortunate prior to that, and that is not some reason to go off, half-cocked on the sport of football. Coach, you said you had one more quick one for him?
Yeah, I want to go a different topic, if I may, get a little national perspective on this. To the horrid Cleveland Browns we go, and Josh Gordon was actually back on the field this past Sunday in that Browns yet another loss. I thought he did pretty well. He was targeted 11 times, 4 catches, 85 yards, one of them kind of an athletic type of play to make the catch. Give me from that non-Cleveland, non-Browns fan type of perspective what you thought out of Gordon. Is this sustainable?
I was really shocked. I thought it, 3 years away, you expect some level of rust, but he really looks like the old guy. For him to finish with four catches. Yeah, that's kind of the number I expected. But for him to make plays like that, and he probably should have had a touchdown too. DeShone Kizer kind of underthrew one that got broken up. I think it was late in the second quarter. So I thought he looked really, really good. I was shocked at how good he looked. I think the bigger question is how is he going to be after an off season, when he has a chance to learn an offense. He's probably going to be working with a new quarterback, but yeah, there's plenty of reasons to be super optimistic about his future now.
Good stuff. Hey, Adam, thanks very much. Really great discussion. We don't have to agree on everything for it to be awesome analysis, and that's exactly what it was. That's why we like to bring you on. And thank you so much for coming on. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Thank you, Adam. Adam Stites, SB Nation NFL writer, does an outstanding job. You know who else does an outstanding job? The good folks at Car Stereo One. They do an outstanding job of helping you stay warm in the cold Northwest Ohio winters. And you know how they do it? With a remote car starter. That's right, from Car Stereo One. Stop in and ask about starting your car with your smartphone with no monthly fee. It's a perfect Christmas gift for yourself or someone else, as is the custom-installed seat heater. That's right, warm the backside of someone special. Just $129 at Car Stereo One. You could also get Bluetooth streaming audio and a DVD screen, a movie screen from our friends at Pioneer, not for $300, not for $200. How about just $156 at Car Stereo One? Also, you can choose full car window tinting for $149. Car Stereo One, the best remote car starters and the lowest prices. Need directions? Log on to CarStereo1.com. Great first hour. We're going to shift gears, talk a little basketball. Coming up here with David Fernandez of DetroitBadBoys.com. After the top of the hour, local sports center. Then I want to get you involved as well at 866-240-1065 on the ticket.
Not angry. I try not to get angry. I get really angry at missed free throws. It's just a pet peeve of mine. It's what I can control, Jim, and that's really what it is all about. And LeAngelo has been, since coming back, he's been tremendous as far as been to all his classes, all the tutors, all the mentors. He's done exactly what's been asked of him. I don't think it's angry. I think it was just more maybe surprised. If you're looking for one word, maybe it was surprised because it's nothing that we saw coming.
Do you plan on reaching out to either Jello or his father about what happened?
No.
Why not?
Why for? I didn't make that decision. I mean, I'm here. I'm at Pauley every day. I'm at the Austin Center every day working. If they need to talk, they know where to find me.
LeVar told me he felt like LeAngelo would average 25 points a game. That was never going to be the case. We're talking different circumstances now. He was frustrated, as he told me yesterday, that no decision was made on the length of the suspension. And I think LeVar's mindset on this is, I want my kid to keep getting better. And by getting better, he's got to play. So he's got to play somewhere. So he's taken him out of UCLA, and now he'll explore other options, which are certainly the overseas route. His goal is to have all three of his boys in the Lakers organization. And he said it. Even if Jello isn't drafted, he wants him on the Lakers D-League team. And eventually, he wants Melo on the Lakers. He's going to do what he can to make that happen.
I think it was warranted. Thought maybe a fine, pretty steep fine, something like that. And the play that happened in the context of a football play. It wasn't away from the ball. It wasn't hit on a kicker, a defenseless player. It was a guy getting ready to make a tackle, a much bigger football player. Obviously, we don't like the taunting, standing over him, things like that. If you look at what Gronk did and what Juju did, and he got the same suspension, I don't know that that's necessarily fair.
Watching the game with my wife, who's, you know, she's a football life, but just as much of a fan as I am, we talked about, from the league standpoint, where they want to go. And that game was the antithesis of where the league wants the game to go. 10 years ago, some of the things that we saw, great. Now, to have that on display on national TV, that is not the picture that the league wants to present to, you know, to the fans, to the younger generation who are coming up.
But the league right now, if you want to change the game, still keeping the game at its base the same, if you want to start disciplining people, you better come up with a better way of being consistent about this. When you're disciplining off the net result and it looks like you're being reactionary, like, let's take the temperature. Are they going to be mad? Let's hit them. If they're not going to be mad, here's a fine. You can't do that.
We've had this problem 2 games in a row. I think we go a little too much just one-on-one isolation. Got to be able to sustain our offensive energy better. Overall, still, our rebounding's got to get better, and our offensive execution's got to get better. But overall, our defense was okay.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I'm going to tell you what, I'm going to say it much more directly than I said it at the start of the last hour when you played that montage. Based on what Lewis Riddick just said, I think he's 100% right. I'm going to say this. Sean McDonough got Juju Smith-Schuster suspended. Period. That's it. Because what Lewis Riddick just said is 100% right. You can't be suspending people based on the temperature of the room, based on the reaction of the people, based on the political winds and how people are talking about this. Because Sean McDonough went and made the NFL game on Monday night into some sort of a gladiatorial Roman Coliseum bloodbath. That's how he made it sound. The league said, yeah, we got to suspend this guy. We got to suspend this guy. Bull bleeping bleep. That's where I'm going to leave that for now as we morph into some NBA conversation right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hour number two rolling now. It's 4:14. You also heard a little bit of Stan Van Gundy talking about his team, which is kind of, hit the skids a little bit. Still a very good overall start to the first quarter of the NBA season, but 3 losses in a row heading into tonight's game at Milwaukee to take on Ye Greek Freak and Eric Bledsoe and the Milwaukee Bucks. And joining us now is David Fernandez from DetroitBadBoys.com with a little preview, a little update on all things Pistons. Hey, David, how are you, sir?
Hey, doing well.
Wow, you sound clear as a bell. Are you on a landline this time?
No, still on the cell. I don't know what's going on, but we're here.
You were in a bad location last time around, or somebody knocked over a tower with their car, a cell tower, because we lost you. But we're good. It's good to have you back, David. Thanks much. You just heard Stan Van a little bit there. What's your analysis? What's going on in the last 3 games that seems to have obviously turned this team in the wrong direction.
So I think each game has its own narrative that's going on. I think, you know, with the Wizards game, which is three games ago now, that's a little bit more of an energy and effort type of game. You know, the Wizards were without John Wall. You'd really expect them to come out a little bit more engaged than they were, and no one really played a good game in that one. You know, you look over at that Sixers game, it was a highly contested game. It was one that, you know, was definitely winnable for the Pistons. They kind of went flat there in the fourth quarter, and you know, but there is actually one theme that you've noticed so far over these past three games, and it's more so the battle of the boards. The Pistons have been getting out-rebounded by an average of 12 rebounds per game over these last three losses, which just isn't good, and that's not typical Detroit Pistons basketball, especially, you know, when you think that they have Andre Drummond, who's the number one rebounder in the league. The only issue is that he's just not getting as much help as he needs.
That's a very interesting point about the boards, and you're right. He can't do it all himself, and you are starting to play some very, very good teams, some very good rebounding teams in the last three games. And just to kind of dovetail on this before I bring Kushlin in with a question for you, that the teams that they're playing, the schedule that they have in front of them is brutal. And there's another story by Sean Corp, one of your colleagues there at DetroitBadBoys.com, who said because of this stretch, the Pistons could theoretically, although you don't expect it to happen, they could very well lose seven games in a row because of what they have coming up, David.
Yeah, they're not going to be favored in these next three games. So they're 4-point underdogs to the Milwaukee Bucks, who they're playing tonight. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to be welcoming both the Celtics and the Warriors to Little Caesars Arena. And both those teams are going to have revenge on their mind. Yeah, you know, the Warriors aren't going to be having Steph Curry, but that doesn't make them any less challenging. I mean, it makes them a little less challenging, but they still have Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, and Klay Thompson. So it is very it's possible. And one thing to note, the Pistons have played in their last 10 games, they've played nine teams that are currently in the playoffs. The only easy game that they've had so far in that stretch is against the Suns. And now they still have three more teams to go in that stretch. So it's a really difficult part of their schedule so far this season, but there is a light at the end of the tunnel after those games. But you really got to hope that, you know, tonight's game is vitally important because of those next two games that follow.
It's really nice to be able to say this about this Pistons team, and I don't know if anybody really would have been able to or would have thought you'd be able to, that, you know, a quarter into the season, roughly, coming off a three-game losing streak, they still have the second best record in the conference in the Central Division anyway at 14-9. That's that's pretty good when you give yourself a little bit of a pad. You know, you build yourself a little bit of a lead with some good early play that even a bad stretch right now doesn't kill you.
Exactly, that's something that, you know, it's been crucial so far, and you know, you really do hope that they can get tonight's win just to even give them a little bit more of a pad. Just knowing that they have the Warriors on Friday and the Celtics on Sunday. So they played really well, and a lot of these games were close. You know, they were in striking distance and could have easily won that game against Philadelphia on Saturday. They had, you know, there was a little bit of a phantom call in that Sunday or in the Monday game against the Spurs, where, you know, they might have had the ball with 5 seconds left, down 1 point, which would have been a much more winnable situation than trying to hoist up a three to tie to go into overtime. So it's not like they've been just completely getting outperformed on a nightly basis. They've had one bad loss in this stretch and two other chances to play against good teams and to get wins against those teams. So it's not necessarily like the wheels are completely falling off here.
David Fernandez writes about the Pistons for DetroitBadBoys.com, breaking it down as they get set for the Bucks tonight, which is a very big challenge. They've got some great talent there, and they're red hot. Jim Cushion, go ahead.
You know, kind of tagging along on this, too, David, that was one of my main things I'm looking at. And if I'm telling Pistons fans right now who may be, you know, oh, I'm a little worried about the last three that they've dropped on the road, as you point out, against teams that are currently in the playoffs. So, and you guys kind of touched on this a little bit, how much of it has to do, you know, just with the block of the schedule that they're in. But on the flip side, as you point out, the Spurs game was close, and there may have been a phantom call at the end. That was only a 3-point game, lost by only five. And those are road games, by the way, on this past Saturday against Philadelphia. So tell me some of the positives, even in these last couple, that they can take out of those.
I mean, particularly, you just look at the Spurs game. Reggie Jackson had his best game so far this season. He had 27 points. I think he only missed three or four shots the entire game. He's really looking fresh and healthy, and looks like he's going to be in that type of form for the rest of the season. There's no reason to think not at this point. You look at the game against Philadelphia, Andre Drummond had an excellent individual performance where he, you know, had 14 points, 11 rebounds, six assists and five steals. So he played really well in that game as well. So your guys that you expect to play well are mostly playing well. Avery Bradley didn't have a great game against the Spurs, and you wouldn't expect that to continue. You wouldn't expect Tobias Harris to be as cold as he's been in these last couple of games. So there is, you know, you would think that they're going to be able to right this ship. And while they might not go 3-0 in these next three games, it shouldn't be a problem going forward, especially when they have the Hawks and the Knicks and the Magic coming up down the road.
We are talking with David Fernandez, DetroitBadBoys.com, about the Pistons' run here. It's a losing run of three in a row. They got the Bucks tonight, and I mentioned hot, and they've won three out of their last four. Have the Bucks, and nobody has been, well, I don't know. Has anybody been much better than Giannis Antetokounmpo, the Greek Freak, has been, averaging 29.9 points per game and 10.2 boards? Is just, you know, coming into his own and blossoming into one of the league's top four, five, or six or so players, shooting 54% from the floor, just doing a little bit of everything for the Milwaukee Bucks. Is, you know, where do you rank him right now? How many guys are playing better at the start of the 2017-18 season? Now, again, we're kind of pretty much through the first quarter of it. How many guys are playing better than him?
I mean, I would have to give the nod just to LeBron James and James Harden, just because their teams are playing better. Mm-hmm. Now, on an individual basis, they're all pretty up there. You know, LeBron James is 28, 8, 8, and 5. James Harden's 30-plus points, 10-plus assists per game. So, you know, these three guys are really kind of separating themselves as the true MVP contenders. It's just that, you know, LeBron James and James Harden's teams are just playing so well right now that you'd have to give them the nod, but Giannis is an unstoppable force. He's, you know, he had 40 points, in last night's game against the Celtics. So, you know, he's a difficult handle. You know, there's no one on the Pistons that can necessarily guard him. So, no, he's a problem, and it's kind of crazy to see, because he was something like the 15th or 16th pick in the draft.
Where do you rank Kyrie Irving in that group? I noticed he was out of your list. You know what's amazing? The Cavaliers have won 12 games in a row, and you think, wow, they're running away with the East if they do that. They're still three games in the loss column behind the Boston Celtics at 21-4. And the straw that stirs their drink, just as he wanted when he requested, you know, that trade, is Kyrie, who's averaging 23.5 points and shooting the hell out of the ball at 48%. Averaging a little over five assists, I think, and he's only playing 31 minutes a game. So it's not like he's out there playing 42, 43 minutes like some of these other guys are in a very, very well-orchestrated offense and minute distribution, if you will, by Brad Stevens.
He's up there. He's got to be. They're the number one team in the NBA in general. You know, I would maybe put him on that second tier, just because, you know, the MVP isn't always who's playing the best on the best team. Sometimes it's just a numbers game. You know, you obviously look at last season as a pretty good benchmark for that, where Russell Westbrook's MVP campaign, those Thunder weren't a 50-win team, but he was just a statistical force. Now, Kyrie doesn't have as sexy as numbers as the other three guys that I had mentioned, but he's playing outstanding basketball, and he's been playing really well in his last three or four games. I think he's upped his points per game to 27 or 28 points per game over that course of a timeline. So he's up there, but I just wouldn't put him up there with those three guys strictly because of a numbers thing and, you know, just thinking about how people vote for this position or for this award.
You know what's really remarkable about Kyrie? What would you think playing with LeBron and Kevin Love last year versus playing with this group of Celtics? Where do you think he'd get more shots?
I would assume that he'd be getting in more with these Celtics, right?
You would think that, but he's not. He shot last year 19.7 times a game in 35 minutes. This year he's shooting 17 times a game in 31 minutes. So he's actually, without having a LeBron to defer to or Love or anything like that, he is only taking 17 shots a game on his way to that, as I said, 23.5. And like you said, maybe starting to ramp that up a little bit the last couple of games, taking a few more. But averaging thus far through 22 games, 25 games, or 21-4. Rock just 17 solid. Shots a game. That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, rock solid. I mean, I had so on the podcast that I'm on, Inside the Cylinder, we had a discussion about who we think are the surefire all-stars from the Eastern Conference. And there was only three guys that made that list: Kyrie Irving, LeBron James, and Giannis. After that, we kind of had a debate talking about which guys might get in, which guys are probable. But of the surefire guys that are definitely going to be starting in the Eastern Conference, starting representing the Eastern Conference for the All-Star game, those are the only three guys that I have up there.
Since you brought it up, how do you like that new format that they're going to do where the top vote getter in each conference gets to pick his team?
I think it'll be fun. I would hope that if you're building your own team, you might kind of have a renewed sense of like a rivalry that could go on, where you might be able to actually see some serious basketball, not only that's played, with 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, where they kind of lock it down if it is a closer game. So I'm interested to see it. It's a fun time. It's everyone's kind of on a break at that point. So I'm interested to see how it goes. It's a little different, and it's kind of weird to talk about. It's kind of clunky to bring it up, but I am interested to see who picks who, and I don't know, is LeBron and Kyrie going to be on the same team? I doubt it.
Because LeBron's going to be the top pick or top vote getter in the East. There's no question. Would he pick Kyrie, or would he say, no, you go play with the other side? I'm not. We're not doing this again.
He's so politically engaged all the time, just thinking about the way that he just operates his day-to-day life, that I wouldn't be surprised if he did pick Kyrie just so he could, throw an olive branch of some sort. But I don't know. He's a complex character. I have no idea what he would do.
Since can you do me a favor? Tell your fellow podcasters on Inside the Cylinder or In the Cylinder. Is it which is it? Inside or In?
Inside the Cylinder.
Inside the Cylinder, which is kind of cool, by the way. Can I throw a fourth name on there, which I think is a mortal lock as of right now? How could you not include Kristaps Porzingis at this point from the East?
I mean,
25.8 points, 47% from the floor. He has just been a beast for the Knicks.
Yeah, he's going to make the All-Star team. I wouldn't say that he's not. It's just, when I think of a perfect All-Star, I think of a guy that's having a really strong statistical season, who's putting up some gaudy numbers, and whose team is playing really, really well. Now, Giannis isn't really there because his team's not playing much better. The Knicks, they've kind of cooled off a little bit with Kristaps being out, mind you. So the only knock that I have on Giannis is that the team's under 500 at this time, or they're at 500. Kristaps. But other than that, I would definitely, I'm going to have him in there. He's going to be making the All-Star team. And he deserves to, but that's the only thing is that usually the better teams, those are those surefire guys. But don't get it wrong, like Kristaps will be in the All-Star game.
He, by the way, you said he's been out. He's probable for tonight, is where they list him now for tonight's game against the Grizzlies. Jim Cushman, go ahead.
Talking about accolades and All-Star appearances and MVP talk got me thinking just now. And I start what I'm about to say with your Andre Drummond free throw percentage update. He is shooting 64% still from the free throw line, and we're getting into the park, guys, where it's not a small sample size. He is 71 for 111 at the free throw line. My question to you, if he could somehow keep that number in this neighborhood, does that garner him and any possible votes for most improved player? Just because of how atrocious he's been at the line for his whole career, if he suddenly has a season where he shoots 60%, even if he doesn't win, I've got to believe that's got to count for some votes in a most improved player award.
I think so. There's like kind of two different thought processes to the most improved player. People that take the award seriously and really think about the guy that's really improved holistically across his game, Andre Drummond's going to be getting some of those votes. You mentioned it. He is on historical pace to improve his free throw percentage. Not only that, he's over tripled the amount of assists per game that he's averaged in any particular season. So he's not only just improving his free throws, he's just kind of transformed the way he's approached the game to a much more efficient offensive player. And I think that alone, would get him a couple votes, not even counting some of the other aspects of his game that he's improved, while still being the best rebounder on the planet. So I think he's definitely going to be up there, but usually this award goes to whichever guy was averaging 7 points per game last season, that's now averaging 19 points per game this season. So it's a little bit of a, it's a little bit of a strange award, but I think Andre Drummond literally is maybe the most improved player in the league right now.
I got to tell you, man, you did the opposite of what I expected there, because you were saying yes, and I was going to say no. Just because you improve your free throws, you're already the NBA's rebounding champion. You're going to have to go from 15 to 19 boards a game before I tell you you're improved over last year. You're already great. You already did some great things. You can't, you know, just improve your woeful 38% career free throw shooting up to 60% and say you're the most improved player. But you made a very compelling case there, David. His approach, everything else you said, and also kind of when you talked about the MVP and the All-Stars, if you factor in team performance, you might argue that his performance is the reason why the Pistons are, you know, fourth in the East right now and second in the division. And if they stay, you know, in that realm throughout for the majority of the season, then maybe he does get a few votes for that.
Yeah, I think he'll get a couple of votes. You know, it's more so the free throws. Yes, that's the highlight of his improvement, but he has really shifted his game in totality. He's a much more efficient offensive player. You're not seeing it anymore where they're just dropping the ball down to Andre Drummond on the block, and he's just chucking up some 8-foot baby hook, and it's just hitting off the side of the backboard. Those days are over in Detroit. Now the offense is running 100% through Andre Drummond, and he's picking guys up. He's finding guys cutting to the hoop. He's just putting it right in their pocket, and they're getting run nice, easy looks at the rim. So he's generating a lot more offense, more so than just his 14 points per game would show. And yeah, you know, you're right. That's the thing with Andre Drummond. It's like, you know, he's not going to jump from 15 to 20 points or 20 rebounds per game. He's not going to jump from 14 points per game to 20 points per game. That's not the player that he is, but that's not the player that Detroit needs him to be. So I think the kudos that Andre Drummond has gotten so far this season is earned. But there's a lot of guys that have made some pretty good jumps so far this season, including Victor Oladipo, who's in the division. And, you know, there's a few other guys that are going to get some votes for this award. But he's up there for sure.
David Fernandez talking Pistons basketball and all things NBA with us right here on The Ticket. David, it's great to catch up with you. I don't know what you did to fix that signal, if you're standing inside of a phone booth or something now, clear of interference, whatever you did, it worked, my man. Great to have you back on the show. Thanks for joining us and good analysis. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Thank you. Take care.
All right, you got it. Hey, on our way into the bottom of the hour, local sports center, how about we hook you up with another pair of tickets? Matter of fact, Kush, don't we have two pairs sitting there on the counter someplace?
Yes, we do, in fact. Do. Oh, yeah.
How'd you like to go see Steve Martin and Martin Short, a couple of comedy legends? They're going to be at the Toledo Zoo on May 25th. Tickets go on sale. I know it sounds like a long time away, right? 6 months away, roughly. But tickets go on sale on Friday, and they will go fast. You don't have to deal with it on Friday. You can get them free right now. Since there are two pair, we'll give them to callers 5 and 6. Callers 5 and 6 right now at 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. So we'll set you up with those tickets. We'll get a bottom of the hour local sports center. Then we'll come back and hopefully take some of your phone calls on the topics that we've covered today as we continue until 5 o'clock at drive time right here on ESPN 1065.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
Yeah, buddy, we got 20 minutes of outstanding awesome left, and then we're going to turn it over to Mike Miller for a little drive time awesomeness. That'll be at 5 o'clock, unless you were in tonight. Is Mike in tonight?
No, Mike is in tonight, doubleheader for not just drive time, but face off the hockey show. It is nice. Wednesday, after all.
Nice, nice, nice. All right, so we got that coming up. Kush, I want to shift gears because we have not talked about the balls. by the way, congratulations. Let me do that first. Matthew Welke.
That's
Toledo?
Right. Yep.
And Chad, is that an I or an L?
Helbert
is an L. I can't tell if it's an L or an I on my screen. Chad Helbert of Perrysburg. Congratulations to both of them. They won the Steve Martin, Martin Short tickets. And we've got two more pair of those we're going to give away in tomorrow's program because they go on sale at Live Nation on Friday.
Yeah. Doesn't say it on my little prize sheets for them, but this is a Beat the Box Office event we're doing.
Yes, it is. And we're going to help you beat that Friday box office when they do go on sale. All right. I think it's safe to say, Jim, LaVar Ball, I think he has a psychological condition.
Yeah, think?
No, I mean, you know, we're not just making fun
now.
All
right, yeah, true. We're trying to be a little serious here.
Yeah. Ever since this man burst onto the scene with his kids it started a little over a year ago when he started saying that his freshman son at UCLA, Lonzo, was better than Steph Curry right now.
Right.
At that time.
Yeah.
Right now. And that if you put him in on the Warriors, they'd be the NBA champions. And if you put Curry as the point guard of UCLA, they wouldn't be as good. If you remember all that.
Yeah.
And people are like, what is wrong with this man?
It's hard to keep track of it all since then, but yes,
yeah,
I do
that's
remember
kinda
it.
Where it really started, and then the I would have beaten Michael Jordan in one-on-one in my prime because I'm bigger than he is, and he's he might be faster than me, but I'm bigger, so I would body him. And if he was smaller than me or if he was bigger than me, then I would be out-quicking him, and there's nobody could beat me one-on-one. All this crap and all of this, you know, Lonzo, LiAngelo, LaMelo, and they're all going to be big baller brand and blah, blah. I mean, it's one thing to be a world-class marketer, which is what he is. To me, he reminds me of P.T. Barnum. He's a circus entertainer. What do you call it? Ringmaster?
Yes, right? That'd be the term, I think. Yes, ringmaster.
He's just going over the top. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, get ready for the greatest show in the world. I mean, it's just, and you have to be that if you're a ringmaster trying to draw attention to the circus and to get people to fill the seats. And I think that's exactly what he is. He's, look at the greatest show in the world. My three sons are going to be, you know, the next NBA superstars. And they're all going to play together. They're all going to play on, at UCLA, and then they're all going to play on the Lakers at the same time. And, you know what? And just the outlandish interviews, the insults, the misogyny, you know, the disrespect of women and all the things that he's doing. You say, hey, you know what? Dude's a marketer. He's trying to sell his $500 shoes. $500 shoes. Still cannot believe that.
I still can't get over that either.
By the way, there's a little controversy over that, too. I don't know if you knew this, but the Lonzos that were the first ones that they put on sale for $495
okay.
came with a $500 option. You could jack it up to $995 if you wanted them signed by Lonzo, the then not even rookie. He hadn't even made the draft yet.
That does sound familiar. I kind of remember that happening.
They'd be signed, and they would come with a certificate of authenticity and like a glow plexiglass case to display them in. And just literally a couple of days ago, if you just, you know, browse the internet and you see the name Ball someplace, you're going to see everything. And I saw this. People are really, really livid because they're showing up. People who paid the $1,000. By the way, anybody who paid the $1,000, the $995 for an unknown kid who's a rookie, who's shooting 25% from the floor as a rookie through the first quarter of the season, you paid $1,000 for that dude's shoes, you should lose your house. I'm sorry, let me rephrase. That's mean.
Yeah.
You're going to lose your house.
Yeah, there you go. That's a little better.
Because you are not smart enough to handle money. That's what I'm saying. I shouldn't say you should. You're going to end up under a bridge. Because if you spent $1,000 on those, either A, money is no object for you. It's just, you know, you've got millions, you light your cigars with $100 bills. And if that's the case, fine. Buy your, you know, $1,000 Lonzos. If you're anything short of that, you're going to be broke soon and living off the state. Because you don't know how to handle money. That's just, and God, if you do fit that bill, if you're not a multimillionaire with $100 bills to light your cigars with, and you bought a pair of those shoes anyway, please call me at the radio station, okay? Because I got something to sell you. I'm going to, you're just going to love it. I want to do business with you. As a matter of fact, I'm going to make all kinds of things available to you. Because you, my friend, are a sucker if you did that. But having said that, now, all of the I'm just trying to sell stuff is to me no longer funny because I think there's a serious psychological condition. One, he pulled his youngest son, LaMelo, out of Chino Hills High School in Los Angeles where the other two went. He pulled him out because he didn't like the coaching there. And he figures, I'll homeschool my son. I can teach him at home, and I can also train him in basketball. He doesn't need to play for that coach at Chino Hills. And he already has the offer for a scholarship at UCLA, like the older brothers did. So I'm going to pull him out and essentially saying I'm going to run and rule every aspect of my young, almost adult son's life. LiAngelo, the one in the middle, is already a freshman at UCLA. And now after, and we know the story, I don't want to repeat the whole thing, but after the incident in China in which he was caught shoplifting with two of his teammates and ended up facing the back end of a 3 to 7 or 3 to 10 year prison sentence in China if they didn't work a little magic at the State Department and with the President of the United States to get him out. He comes back, and he is facing now the school's discipline. Because after all, they went over there and not only embarrassed the national NCAA, not only did they embarrass the university because they're representing UCLA, they embarrassed the United States by sending these, you know, privileged, cocky scholarship athletes over there to take whatever the heck they want from the Chinese. You don't do that at anywhere ever, but you certainly don't do that in a communist country.
And I'm glad you're putting the plural on that because, you know, with LiAngelo Ball being one of them, it's easy to lose track. There were three of them, don't forget.
But Jim, this is where I'm going. I'm glad you pointed that out because this is the part where I'm saying that I think he has a mental condition of some sort. LeVar, that is. He has now decided that the indefinite suspension punishment by UCLA is taking too long. We don't know when he's coming back. And since we don't know when he's coming back, and we only plan to keep him at UCLA for 1 year anyway, he's a one and done, I'm yanking him out of UCLA. I could train him better for the NBA draft than they could at UCLA anyway, which is a smack in the face of Steve Alford, by the way. And it's also just wholly delusional because there is not one NBA scout for any one of the 30 teams that would have LiAngelo Ball as a one and done. Or, especially now, since he won't even have the 1 year of big-time college basketball in the Pac-12, that will have them on either one of their first-round or second-round draft boards. If he gets to the NBA at all, it will be as an undrafted free agent. More likely route is he's going to go to an international league and play over there. He is not anywhere near good enough, according to the scouts, to warrant a draft pick, especially now that he won't even have the 1 year as a quote-unquote one-and-done. He's not good enough to be a one-and-done, to not even have the one and just be done. It's delusional thinking, and I think he's got a real screw loose. And this is the other part of the reason why I say this. I heard a report today. Sources, did you see his appearance, LeVar and LiAngelo, on the Today Show?
No, I did not.
He went on the Today Show. And
was this today?
Yesterday.
Okay, yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday's Today Show. And he was asked, can you explain specifically what happened in China? Clear it up for us. And he, I believe at the urging of his father, told the nation that cares about this, by way of the Today Show, that his two teammates were the one who was just taking stuff. They went to this Louis Vuitton store, where it's extraordinarily expensive. And he, his two buddies just started taking stuff, so he just said, okay, I'll join in. And because he just joined in, it really wasn't his fault. They kind of started it, and he just kind of made I think he said, it's funny because he is the kid. He is the college freshman, and he said, you know how kids think. Speaking of himself, I just joined in. And we went back, and we got back to our hotel and thought everything was fine, but then the next morning the police showed up, and they took us into custody, blah, 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 blah. So he and his father threw two young teammates under the bus, saying it was them who started it and I just kind of joined in. Well, I heard a report today, sources telling Fox News, not Fox News, the political channel, Fox Sports, beg your pardon, Fox Sports and the Fox Sports channel, telling the Fox Sports people that is 100% inaccurate. That is LiAngelo and LeVar Ball concocting a story to make the other two guys, to throw them under the bus and make them look like the criminals, and LiAngelo just got caught up. The truth is, according to that report from Fox, LiAngelo Ball tried to buy the $2,000 sunglasses, but his credit card was declined. And when he couldn't get them legally, he just said, the hell with it, I'm going to steal them. So instead of telling the truth, that I stole something, and I decided to shoplift, I decided to engage in what really, quite frankly, is not petty theft. He wasn't stealing a pack of gum. I did that. Did you ever steal a pack of gum from a drugstore when you were young?
Yes, I did.
I did. You know what I used to steal in the late 1970s? Was a pack of football cards. I'd go up to Hess and Hess drugstore, and they were like, I don't know, 50 cents a pack or a quarter pack or whatever the heck it was. And sometimes I'd only have a dime or a dime and a nickel. And, mm-hmm. and I'm not trying to be that guy.
Right, right.
In my day, we walked 7 miles to school uphill both ways. But, I mean.
Are you, how much of this were you doing it for the gum?
No, it wasn't for that. It was for the cards, man. No, I no, wanted the true. Cards. Oh, my God. Me and my buddies, we collected and we traded and we did. I mean, it was just the thing. There's no internet. There's no fantasy football. Our fantasy was the cards.
Hey, remember, don't forget, I may be of the younger persuasion, Bob, but the internet, as we know, it didn't really happen until I was a teenager. So I went to all my baseball stats with the baseball cards that I was collecting in those days.
That was our fantasy.
Yeah.
We would look at the back of the cards and see these stats. And I've got, you know, I got a Lawrence McCutcheon of the Rams. What do you got? Well, I've got a Chuck Foreman of the Vikings. And we'll look at the stats on the back and decide who is better and decide, all right, I'll trade you McCutcheon for Foreman, but you got to give me, Rocky Blyer also or something. I mean, this was our fantasy. It's like drafting teams. And we try to put together the best team based on our cards. And we'd line them up. Hell, I would line up my football cards in formation. My center, my guards, my tackles on the floor of one of our houses in a formation, and he'd line up his defense, and we'd decide who was better. I mean, it was, you know, I don't mean to do all this nostalgic stuff, but my point to all of that is, if I only had 15 cents, I'd stole a pack of football cards a time or two. Not proud of it. I was a kid. But you do it, and people do it. This wasn't a pack of football cards, Jim. This was a $2,000 pair of sunglasses that this spoiled, elitist, rich, because the LeVar Ball family, as you know, is well off. They've sold themselves, you know, to, you know, the internet TV show and everything else. They've got money. You don't live in Chino Hills for free. Okay? They got money. And he's on scholarship, so he doesn't have to worry about paying for school. And he decided, my credit card isn't working, I'm just going to take them. That's not petty theft. That's a felony. When you get up into a, you know, from a quarter pack of baseball cards to $2,000 sunglasses, this is not minor. So the first lie was that the other dudes did it first, and then I just joined in. That's not true. And then the second part of the story is, you know how LeVar Ball refused to thank Donald Trump for getting his kid out of the Chinese prison? Well, turns out that it wasn't exactly like that, but it wasn't exactly like LeVar Ball said either. According to the report from Fox Sports, the State Department, by way of the U.S. consulate in China, talked to Chinese leaders free of for President Trump's intervention and worked out a deal where they said, okay, we're not going to lock him up for 3 to 10 years. The way, you know, an ordinary person would, but we're going to hold him here for 20 days under house arrest, okay, because we have to show a sign of, you know, this is not okay. 20 days. But the problem was, according to the Fox Sports report, you sit in China for 20 days, you miss 3 weeks of classes, or almost 4 weeks of classes, at UCLA, they're going to end up failing all of their classes that they do have and not be eligible to play basketball. For this one season, you know, that LiAngelo was going to play the one and done, and, you know, I don't know how long the other guys were going to play. They were going to be ineligible if they failed their classes. Because you don't get, you know, deadline delays or deadline extensions or whatever, because you're in jail. Doesn't work that way. That's when President Trump intervened and talked to the Chinese president and said, these guys are in a bad way here. We know they're idiot knuckleheads who did this, but can you see free to let them go? And that's when the Chinese president intervened and said, we're going to let them go home now, which was after 8 days instead of 20 days. So Trump was right. He helped save these kids. The lies being told by LeVar Ball and LiAngelo Ball just continue to mount on top of themselves. And the fact of the matter is that it's highly likely that neither one of the other two guys are ever going to make it to the NBA, LiAngelo or LaMelo, because they're not going to have any college experience. You can't go straight from the high school league to there, and neither one of them are as talented as their brother, Lonzo, who, by the way, isn't even the best rookie on the Lakers. So I think this dude has got a serious screw loose. I don't know why. I don't know what. I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, but looking at it from the outside, it's beyond just marketing now. He is damaging these kids' lives and their future. Whatever their futures hold, he is hurting it by more of these antics. I don't have a ton of time here, but let me squeeze Eric in Toledo on the air. Eric, you're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Yeah, you're 100% right. There's something off about this guy. And it just doesn't seem right. He is lying to everybody. He's now influencing his sons to do the exact same thing.
Yep.
Lonzo, as of right now, is busting. He's on the verge of busting. You said it yourself. He's not the best rookie on his own team.
Right.
LaMelo's not going to be playing for the next 2 years in high school with a team, but he'll go play for his big baller brand crap team, AAU.
Yep.
I mean,
Which does not prepare you for the NBA at all.
No, it doesn't.
AAU basketball is like a far cry from what real basketball is.
But you'll hear kids say, I would rather play in the AAU than high school. But you need to play in the high school because you're going to get that team mentality more so than you are in the AAU, because AAUs highlight individual talent.
That's exactly what it does. It's run and gun, and everybody goes to get their own, and it's not playing team chemistry basketball. You're 100% right.
System.
And this is something that this guy – and the real sad part about it is, Eric, and I got to run there. The music is playing. Thanks, brother, for the call. And if I left you on hold and I see some people there, I apologize. I got to go, though. But the real sad part about it to me is LaVar Ball seems to have done a pretty good job as a father of raising some intelligent kids. They didn't drop out of high school. You know, a lot of kids like that don't make it through high school. They're not educated. They're not well-spoken. And these guys all seem to be very well-spoken, very well-mannered. He has done a good job as a father from that standpoint, but he is wrecking them as far as their basketball prospects and their future, all with what I can really only diagnose as a layman and not a doctor, as some sort of psychological narcissism that is getting in the way of what his kids really could ultimately do. All right, that's it. I'm sorry I went long. Mike Miller, don't get mad at me. I'm sorry. I know you're going to have an outstanding show. Mike Miller standing by. He's got your drive time coming up next, followed by Face Off, the hockey show, right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We'll see you tomorrow.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep their trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.